Binance launches DeFi staking with cryptos Kava and DAI. Users of crypto exchange Binance can now stake DAI and Kava as the exchange's decentralized finance DeFi staking platform goes live. Binance's DeFi staking program was first announced Wednesday with DAI, the stablecoin generated by loans on MakerDAO. The Binance initiative aims to tap into this year's booming DeFi market by offering the ability for users earn staking rewards akin to interest on select digital assets. On Thursday, Binance added Kava as the second asset to its staking product. Kava is a DeFi platform backed by Binance, Huobi and OKEX with a native token by the same name. In a statement to CoinDesk, Binance CEO Changpeng Zhao said, "Our users have been requesting Binance.com giving them access to DeFi. Binance prioritizes user experience and in the spirit of the community, Binance.com now offers direct integration into these DeFi products, allowing the product's value to flow out to Binance.com users, and that's happening with Kava and BNB to name a few. The move means Kava users no longer need to interface with the Kava app, but instead can go directly through Binance's DeFi staking portal." Kava's CEO and co-founder, Brian Kerr, said today's DeFi market would not resemble tomorrow's, claiming the sector is just at the tip of the iceberg in terms of adoption. Staking in DeFi means users can participate, utilizing smart contracts, on various issues via voting in a proof-of-stake model as well as earning passive rewards by locking up their crypto. One of India's largest exchanges and a subsidiary of Binance, WarzireX, recently announced it was developing a DeFi product known as an automated market maker in collaboration with Modich. Pomps Morgan Creek leads $50 million investment in crypto lender BlockFi. BlockFi's Bitcoin reward card is inching forward. BlockFi, a major American cryptocurrency lending startup, has completed another funding round featuring major industry investors. The company has raised $50 million in a Series C round led by Anthony Pompliano's crypto asset management firm Morgan Creek Digital, BlockFi announced on August 20. Also known as Pomp, Morgan Creek's co-founder Pompliano is joining BlockFi's board of directors following the investment. The appointment comes after Morgan Creek participated in all three of BlockFi's funding rounds over the past 12 months, including the $18 million Series A round in August 2019 and the $30 million Series B round in February 2020. The funding round also featured some established BlockFi investors like Winklevoss Capital, venture capital fund Valar Ventures and CMT Digital. Other participating investors included Castle Island Ventures, SCB10X, Avon Ventures, Purple Arch Ventures, Kinetic Capital, Hashkey, and NBA player Matthew Dellavedova. As announced, the new funding comes amid BlockFi seeing a tenfold revenue increase over the past year. The company now has $100 million in revenues over the past year, while managed assets account for more than $1.5 billion to date, BlockFi's representatives said. Similarly to previous funding round announcements, BlockFi outlined that the newly raised funds will be used to further grow the company as well as the upcoming release of a Bitcoin BTC rewards credit card. BlockFi revealed plans for the card in early 2020, positioning it as the world's first ever crypto rewards credit card. Similarly to existing crypto reward apps like Lolli, BlockFi wants to provide global customers with cashback in cryptos like Bitcoin. The card is expected to be released in Q3 or Q4 2020, with CEO Zach Prince claiming that the crypto rewards would amount to somewhere between 1.5% and 3% from purchases in fiat. Top Indian central banker says cryptos have a future but fears monopoly. A former chief economist of the IMF said neither private digital currencies nor central bank digital currencies should hold a monopoly. The former governor of Reserve Bank of India, Raghuram Rajan, said that private cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin (BTC) and Facebook's Libra may have a future even when central banks roll out their own digital currencies. Rajan, who was also the chief economist and research director at the International Monetary Fund from 2000-2006, said during a CNBC podcast that one of these digital currencies might only become problematic if it were to hold a monopoly. However, he believes that there will be other private digital currencies that will play different roles and provide strong competition to existing ones. The former central banker said that in the future, Bitcoin will mainly act as a store of value or a speculative asset rather than a medium of exchange. Bitcoin is a bit like gold, he added. Conversely, Libra will be used for day-to-day transactions, Rajan said. Rajan also expressed his concerns about banks issuing central bank digital currencies. He said that banks will be able to obtain a huge amount of information through the use of CBDCs, but people may not be comfortable sharing all their personal payment information. Banks would need to decide what data they want to collect and how they would want to use it, he added. Similar to private digital currencies, it will also be a problem if there is a monopoly central bank digital currency without safeguards on the central bank's use and management of the currency and the data that accompanies it. It will be beneficial to have competition for both private as well as central bank digital currencies, Rajan said. Rajan concluded that, while there are challenges to be solved in the digital currency space, he would like to see private digital currencies coexist with central bank digital currencies and see what works out best. South African regulator warns against using Mirror Trading International. Mirror Trading International is getting flack from regulators worldwide. A month after the Texas State Securities Board took action against Mirror Trading International, MTI, South Africa's Financial Services Conduct Authority, FSCA, is also investigating the company's trading activities. According to the information MTI shared with FSCA, the company conducts high-frequency derivatives trades using bots on behalf of its clients. The financial watchdog said in a statement that the current business model of MTI requires it to own a financial service provider license, but it does not seem to have one. The FSCA's biggest concern was that MTI was promising its clients returns of as much as 10% per month. This, they stressed, was quite far-fetched and unrealistic. While the company claims to have more than 2.9 billion South African rand, $168 million, in clients' funds in trading accounts, the FSCA said it was concerned whether the funds really existed. The FSCA warned people against using MTI services, claiming it did not own the mandatory license to operate and has advised its existing clients to request immediate refunds. To add more substance to their doubts against MTI, the FSCA pointed to a public statement by MTI's platform broker FX Choice, which denied the legitimacy of the services and trading volumes claimed by MTI. The regulator said it was currently in the process of obtaining confirmation regarding these claims. The regulator said that it was reviewing information and will involve the South African Police Service once they are able to confirm the discrepancies. In July, MTI had claimed that it was in discussion with the FSCA and was working on regulatory compliance. It also said it would engage with U.S. Texas Securities Commission regarding the cease and desist order from the Texas State Securities Board. Ethereum-based MAD network aims to clean up advertising's programmatic cesspool. There's a joke in the world of digital advertising. How many companies does it take to put an ad on a website? In fact, there can be as many as 15 intermediaries participating in this opaque process, sponging up around 30% of the advertising spend. To fix this broken system, the next generation of ad tech specialists are again pinning their hopes on blockchain technology. Announced Thursday, MAD Network, a permissioned layer running on top of Ethereum while using the public blockchain itself as its immutable system of record, emerges from stealth with a testnet coming next month. Ad tech provider MadHive and advertising industry consortium AdLedger had previously piloted an entire system of data sharing and accounting on Ethereum, but over the past couple of years they decided a layer 2 approach was needed in order to scale. Blockchain is often used to help automate manual or paper-based processes, but in the case of advertising, it's the system of automation itself that's the problem. The first iteration of hastily erected programmatic web advertising, a mishmash of servers and accounting platforms, has led to a black box riddled with fees and inconsistencies. Programmatic cesspool. The time is right for blockchain transparency to cut through the Gordian knot of programmatic advertising, particularly as traditional broadcast television makes the transition to the world of connected devices, said Mad Network project lead Adam Helfgott. An NBC or a Fox can't really afford to lose 30% of their television media revenue into this like programmatic cesspool, said Helfgott. These legacy media companies are used to having a very clean transaction, and not all this black boxy programmatic stuff in the middle. The AdLedger Blockchain Consortium, of which MadHive is a member, includes some heavyweight media players such as Viacom, Publicis Media, Hearst Television, IPG Media Brands, Hershey, and also IBM. Back in 2018, AdLedger did a pilot with IBM, which committed some advertising budget to a system running on Big Blue's preferred blockchain, Hyperledger Fabric. As well as clarifying where intermediary systems impinge, Mad Network's blockchain also helps provide insights into the programmatic supply chain in the era of oncoming data privacy regulation, said Christiana Cacciapuoti, AdLedger's executive director. We are seeing a greater demand for insights into which data is going to which players and from which consumers, and who got that consent and how it's being passed around, said Cacciapuoti. Just as that blockchain-based system of accounting can track the transfer of dollars and the business outcome angle, it can also track data transfer and take account of privacy angles. Touchpoint of truth. The revamped Layer 2 solution on Ethereum uses the public mainnet as a touchpoint of truth, said Helfgott, likening it to the baseline protocol built by John Wolpert of Consensus and Paul Brody of EY. The deployment of nodes is handled by nodes as a service provider Blockdaemon, a close partner of MadHive, Helfgott added. In terms of the roadmap, Cacciapuoti said, we are looking at around September 1st for publicly launching our testnet, and then mainnet in Q4. In the not-too-distant future, it's inevitable that most people will be watching TV via IP-delivered video, said Helfgott. Unless a company like MadHive and Mad Network steps in, it's inevitable that we'll run over the mobile media infrastructure that exists today, that Google kind of owns, he said. AdTech paid for the internet to be built out by Google, and now we kind of see AdTech paying for blockchain to be built out at scale. BlockFi raises $50 million from universities, NBA star, others as crypto lending source. After $50 million in fresh capital, crypto lender BlockFi has now raised nearly $100 million in the past 12 months. Announced Thursday, the latest round, a Series C, was led by Anthony Pompliano's Morgan Creek Digital. It's the second largest round to be led by the VC firm, with figures $103 million Series C topping the list. At the moment, BlockFi has $1.5 billion in crypto assets on its lending platform and is producing a little less than $10 million a month in revenue, CEO Zach Prince said in an interview. He said BlockFi is still trying to add personnel and keep equity capital stable in order to quickly expand geographically. Prince also expects to have the first Bitcoin rewards cards in the market by year's end and a more public rollout early next year. You have to work with quite a few partners to bring a credit card to market, Prince said. Some of them haven't really handled the transition from being fully in office to being fully remote as smoothly as companies like BlockFi have. New investors. Other participants in the Series C include Peter Thiel's Valar Ventures, the lead investor in BlockFi's A&B rounds CMT Digital, Castle Island Ventures, Winklevoss Capital, SCB10X, Avon Ventures, Purple Arch Ventures, Kinetic Capital, Hashkey, Michael Antonov, National Basketball Association player Matthew Dellavedova, and two unnamed university endowments. Dellavedova, who is a guard for the Cleveland Cavaliers, first learned about crypto in 2017 and was introduced to BlockFi by Morgan Creek's Pompliano later on, he said in an interview. Delavadova has been making angel investments for the past 3 to 4 years, but BlockFi is the basketball player's first crypto play, aside from holding a little Bitcoin and Ether, he said. I would say I am still a rookie in this space, he said. I think having an interest rate that you can have on your crypto is appealing. Repeat investor Sterling Witzke, a partner at Winklevoss Capital, said BlockFi's ability to resonate with both retail and institutional customers has been a key selling point. We look forward to supporting the BlockFi team as they launch their next iteration of products and continue to drive mainstream adoption, firmly cementing crypto at the core of the future of finance, she said in a statement. Profits during a crisis. Prince said BlockFi was able to continue its lending operation even after the March Bitcoin crash while other lending firms took a short break. Similar to Genesis and Celsius, BlockFi says March ended up being a good month for crypto lending because of the sector's primary borrowers, proprietary traders and market makers. The event in March, we didn't like it because there were clients of ours who have borrowed dollars secured by their cryptocurrency holdings, where we had to issue margin calls, Prince said. The way that we handled that I believe was more fair and flexible than the way those things are handled on platforms where everything is very black and white. While interest rates on fiat-backed crypto loans have trended downward after March, demand for Bitcoin-backed dollar loans remains high, he added. If you look at the futures curve today, it's implying north of 15% cost of borrowing cash, which makes sense given the bullish position in the market, Prince said. What's next? BlockFi's largest expense is people, Prince said, as the team has grown from just under 100 at the beginning of the year to 175 now, with engineering and security making up half of the staff. Another major growth area is BlockFi's risk management team, including hires related to security infrastructure, compliance and financial risk, Prince said. The lender also has new sales and client relationship teams in London and Singapore and one employee in Hong Kong. Part of the Series C will go toward building a larger balance sheet so BlockFi can remain a less risky institution in the eyes of its counterparties. As a general rule, the firm is aiming to have a loan leverage ratio that is more conservative than what you would find at a traditional bank, which typically holds a minimum 5% leverage ratio. Nothing has changed about BlockFi's collateral levels or its rehypothecation of loan collateral, Prince added. The CEO claims the firm's loan and security agreement is more transparent than what customers would find at a securities lender in the traditional markets, where rehypothecation of loan collateral is also common. It's a scary word, Prince said about rehypothecation. It's the folks who are cut from a similar cloth as the not your keys, not your crypto crowd. Prince would not say whether BlockFi invests customer assets into perpetual swaps, Grayscale Bitcoin Trust shares or other investment vehicles. We think about those and would consider them if it's appropriate within the context of our risk management function, Prince said without going into detail. Prince also admitted that BlockFi does uncollateralized lending to counterparties with certain financial requirements but would not say what percentage of the lender's loan book was composed of unsecured loans. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.